Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And John, I have a guest with us this week. I found him strolling around on the hallways of Twitter, all alone, looking for something to do. I suggested he listen to the podcast. Then I asked him to come on.
It's not Craigslist this time, huh? Well, you know, it's either Craigslist or you're trolling like Imgur or, you know, who knows.
But he actually ended up being a comic book writer, so it worked out. Huh. So everyone, please welcome J.D. Oliva. I knew I was going to do it. J.D. Oliva to the show. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Sometimes that's just how it happens, though, right? You know, just having a conversation on Twitter and the next thing you know, you're on a podcast.
Hey, it's cool with me, man. I like this kind of stuff, so I'm excited to talk.
Cool. So, of course, you know, one of the ways we usually like to start these things off, have you always wanted to be a comic book writer?
Well, why don't we start with this, though? What is your claim to fame? What comic book do you do? And then you can go on with that, because I'm really interested to hear about this.
We're going to get to that. Okay, fine.
I know, but I want to hear about it.
All right, you hijacked
it. I just see a picture there's a picture of an awesome demon on his Facebook page. I want to hear about this.
Right now, I'm running a Kickstarter for a book called Red Sunrise that I'm doing. It's basically a samurai vampire thing in feudal Japan. And we launched a Kickstarter May 1st. We concluded on June 1st. We're trying to raise $2,000. Right now we're 80% of the way there, so we need shade under $400 more to go, and we conclude everything. So just kind of going to that long haul, 10 more days, and we wrap up.
Cool. And so, all right. So to make John happy, what's the elevator pitch for the book?
Elevator pitch is feudal Japan is ruled by vampires, and a young girl hires a nihilistic nomadic samurai to avenge her parents' death at the hands of the evil shogun and his army. And that's kind of the elevator pitch of it. It's like, it's basically like a Kurosawa film mixed with crazy vampires.
Now, does this hold to like that kind of mythology of vampires? Like you put on a left sock and they die or something like that. There's like a lot of very strange mythology about for the mystical creatures on that.
Yeah, there is, and that's what I really like about this is that, you know, in my research I found that there is no vampire. There's like things that are kind of close, but no specific vampire in Japanese mythology, in Shinto tradition and stuff like that. So what I liked about this is it kind of frees you from some of the cliches and some of the mythology that kind of permeate vampire stories. And the characters are allowed to kind of discover what a vampire is, and we don't even use the V word in the story at all. Like, it's clear and it's obvious what they are to us because we know what a vampire is, but the characters in the story don't. So we get to be a little creative. Like, there's no crosses, there's no mirror reflections or anything like that. But we keep true to, like, you know, sunlight and those kind of things. So it was actually a fun story to write and come up with ideas for because, like I said, the setting kind of opens it up a little bit.
Cool. So so then back to my original question is, so this is something you've always wanted to do, be a comic book writer or – how did you get into
this? Pretty much. Well, I've been a comic fan since I was a kid. In the early 90s, I wanted to do two things. I wanted to be a filmmaker and a comic book writer. And I went more with the filmmaker route for a long time. And after making a couple, I made 7 documentary films and I made a couple shorts and one feature. And about 6-7 years ago, I decided I really don't like filmmaking all that much. Like, it's being on a set really isn't that fun. And I really kind of wanted to get more into comics. Like, I really enjoyed reading them, and I said, this is what I really want to do, but I had no idea how to do it. So online, I discovered Andy Schmidt's Comics Experience writing courses, and I was actually a member of the pilot program back in 2009, and I've been in the workshop since 2010. And it was through Andy that I was able to launch my first project as a book called Deluge. that was we kickstarted it way back in 2011. The book came out in 2014, and then it was re-released in 2016 through Comics Experience Digital Publishing Line. So kind of, you know, I like telling stories. And comics, I think, kind of gives you the freedom to do those kind of things that filmmaking really doesn't. Because in comics, it's you and an artist, and you can just kind of go. And in filmmaking, it's a lot of pain in the neck, a lot of things that aren't a lot of fun to deal with, to be quite honest with you. And comics kind of lets you open up and just focus on telling stories.
A lot more personalities and stuff to manage, that sort of thing.
Yeah, really, when it comes to being on set, it's a lot of hours and it's a lot of time spent discussing, where is this going to go, and let's get a shot list together, and, you know, we got to wait for the light to be in a perfect spot. It just bored me, and it just wasn't a lot of fun dealing with, like, the day in and outs of being on a film set. I love writing, and I love editing. That's what I do for a living. I'm a video editor, and I'm a videographer. That's how I pay my mortgage, make my living. So I like those parts of it, but the meat and potatoes of it, being on the set, it's just not a lot of fun.
Right. So, yeah, and I've heard that from other filmmakers before, you know, doing independent works and stuff, that sometimes, too, a lot of it is waiting around to get permission to tell a story you want to tell, you know.
Yeah, or, very much so.
Yeah, waiting for the people to sign on and do it, waiting for people to help pay for to do it, getting a studio to help you out. Yeah,
It's not a lot. Yeah, you're dealing with, like we did a movie in New Orleans way back in 2008, and actually it was pretty cool. I got to work with John Wesley Shipp, The Flash. Oh. Yeah, it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. He's a super cool guy. It was the highlight of the experience, was working with him, but just, you know, everything else around it, like having to deal with the SAG people and having to deal with, you know, union people and having to, you know, it's just a pain, man. Like, I just didn't want to do it. It's like, I just want to tell a story.
Right.
You know? Wouldn't it be ironic if they offered to make a movie out of your comic book?
I would gladly sign away the rights and let them do it.
Yes.
So I noticed your other book and Red Sunrise. Are they digital only?
Yes. Deluge was digital only. There's a long story around that project. We had a publisher when it first launched, and that publisher went out of business back in 2012-ish. And then I just kind of – it took forever to get – we kickstarted it in 2011, and we got it. We completed it. I did everything wrong on that Kickstarter, but we managed to bring the funding, and it worked. But it took 2 years to get the project done, and I kind of thought that I'd, you know, blown my Kickstarter credibility, so I'm kind of hesitant to go back about it. And the process of trying to get Deluge done, like, a publisher went out of business, and then, you know, you do it with every – independent creator does. You try to find a publisher, and you're a nobody, so nobody's really interested in working with you. And I actually launched it on Comixology, and we won a couple small awards, which is pretty cool, and I was really happy about that. And then when Andy launched the Comics Experience digital platform, he's like, hey man, this book was a Comics Experience book. You created it in our classes. You workshopped it. You know, why don't we put it out through us? And I said, absolutely, I'd love to do that. So that kind of got me fired up for writing comics again, because, you know, creating a comic that where, you know, you kind of do things incorrectly.
Right.
It can be a little draining, you know, it can be financially big time draining, but, you know, it's a cool experience. Like, and I really enjoyed writing this book, and, you know, I want to do it again. I'm a lot smarter about this Kickstarter. I took Tyler James's comics launch courses, and I've learned a ton about how to run a better Kickstarter. I have a much more solid plan now, and I was able to take the failures that I had the first time around, and I think we're doing a better job, and I think we're being much, much smarter about it this time.
Okay. You know, most people think when they think Kickstarter, they're like, oh, so I just throw a Kickstarter up, throw what I want on, you know, do the blurb, and then promote it a lot on, like, Facebook and Twitter. But is there, like, more that you have to do? Is that the gist of it, or?
Kind of, and that's kind of what I thought the first time, too, because you read the statistics, oh, the average Kickstarter for a comic brings in $6,000. So the thought was, oh, if I just be average, I'll be really successful. It's so much harder than that. Like, it's really about audience building. And that's one thing that I really learned through comics launch is, like, it's really about taking the time to build your audience. And this one here isn't just, hey, I'm doing a Kickstarter and leave it alone. This is, like, really me reinvesting in myself, being smarter this time about how to build my audience and how to grow an actual career in comics rather than, you know, doing it as a hobby, which I've, you know, been doing it for the past few years just as a hobby. Like, I'm trying to go at it now and really build a business around it as opposed to, you know, just kind of tipping your foot in the water.
Okay. But actually, what I was kind of getting at was,
oh, sorry,
with the no, it's perfectly fine. I enjoyed the that was a great answer. But what I really was getting at was it a conscious choice to go digital only, or was it just, you know, it's an easier route, or?
I think it's two pronged. One, with a digital only campaign, my biggest fear was not. Again, before I said, I really worried that I hurt my credibility because it took so long to get Deluge finished. It did get finished, but it was a fear in the back of my head. So I didn't know if I could come in with a bigger goal. With a digital only campaign, you can have a smaller goal. We're only asking for $2,000 to create a 70 page graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I think that's cool. And with doing digital only, it gives me a chance to start there and really kind of build the audience without having to ask for 2 to 3 times as much to create the same project.
True.
So my thought is if I can get this in people's hands digitally, and this is, you know, this is actually not just my crazy thinking. This is studies have shown that if people like the work, they'll come back and buy it again. So that's my theory. That's my hope is that people will dig the story. And then 6, 8 months, maybe a year from now, when I go, hey, now we're going to print the actual, you know, hardcover version of this, not launch a Kickstarter again, is that hopefully we have enough people that really dig the book that I can reinvest in the project again later on down the line. So, I mean, this is more, like I said, this is like starting out at the base plan, like, you know, starting out low and building from there. With Deluge, I actually did do a print. I actually did print it up, you know, it was exclusive for the people that were invested in the Kickstarter. And then I sent it to editors and stuff like that too, just to kind of get a name out there. And I did not take the cost of shipping into consideration.
Mm.
So that was stupid on my part. And, you wind up, I just ate the cost, you know, you ate the cost of it and live with it. So this time around, again, trying to be smarter, trying not to go crazy. We're starting digital only and we're going to build from there.
Oh, no, I totally understand the issue with shipping. A good friend of mine is an artist and he only sells at shows because, he doesn't want to deal with, you know, figuring out shipping and, you know, making sure stuff gets mailed out to people. You know, he just, he gets his stuff printed up and he controls it and he sells it at the shows.
Absolutely. And that's a smart way to do it. And there's actually a lot of like Kickstarter fulfillment places now, like Kraken Print is one of those print houses that will actually fulfill your Kickstarter for you. So you don't have to, do it, which is, in the future, that's something I'm probably going to lean toward. But I mean, for now, staying clear of it. But I agree. I mean, it's a gigantic hassle. Like, you know, fulfilling a Kickstarter, not hassle is the wrong term. It's a job.
Yeah.
Like it's work. Like just fulfilling the Kickstarter. And I think that some people, you've seen some of these horror stories about people that get in way over their heads and don't know how to get their way out of it. And that's not something I want to do right now. So, you know, I think the digital only kind of gives you a chance to kind of ease into things a little bit more and build a property as opposed to going all in and maybe not knowing exactly what you're doing and getting ready and like, you know, kind of overwhelming yourself, you know?
Right.
That's
right.
My theory anyway.
Yeah. And then, you know, also the other side of it, people can always bring their iPad up to you and you can sign that for them.
True.
Yes. Cool. So you've got, like you said, you're 80% through on your goal. The book looks great. I love the concept too.
Thank you very much.
Who's the artist on the book?
The artist is a Chicago guy I met named Pascal St. Clair. He's fantastic. I put a little ad out when I was just kind of flirting with the idea of doing this Kickstarter. I just kind of wanted to see what I could kind of come up with quickly. And I just threw a quick ad out there and I was seeing who would respond. And, you know, I wasn't overwhelmed by a lot of people that were responding. And then I got Pascal's work and his online portfolio just blew me away. And, you know, he's just kind of one of these guys who just hasn't gotten a break yet.
Okay.
And yeah, he's really good and no one really knows who he is. And, you know, I just said, hey man, this is what we're doing. You want to get involved? And he jumped right on board. So I'm super excited. This is, I think, only the second or third book he's done with someone other than just himself and his own things.
Oh, cool.
So I'm really fired up to get people to see how good this guy is.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. That all it takes is one person to give you a break, right?
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm hoping, that somebody sees it and likes him and he's able to get some more work off of it.
Cool. All right. So, you know what? While we're here talking, you know, again, just friends here. We met on Twitter, right? So speaking of Twitter.
Yeah.
Speaking of comics, I put out a little poll today just to get based on something that we talked about in our last episode, which was, we were talking about reboots, right? So the poll we launched today was, which recent comic book reboot was your was the best from DC or Marvel. And here are the choices I gave everyone. DC's New 52, DC Rebirth, Marvel's Secret Wars, or Stop with the Reboots. So
I'm not familiar with that one.
So JD, what would be your choice?
I actually voted on this. I saw you post this earlier today.
Okay.
I went with the Rebirth. I really enjoyed the New 52. I liked the concept when it first came out, and then after a while, I kind of just walked away from the DC books for a couple years, and the Rebirth's kind of gotten me back in, and I'm more excited about reading DC stuff than I have been in a long time. Like, I really like what DC Rebirth has done. Cool.
Did you read the Button, the four part?
Yes, Button? The Flash Batman book. Yeah, I just finished up the last part last night. I really liked that. It was awesome.
Cool. Yeah, like, yeah. Spoilers, Thawne dies again, but for good, possibly.
Wow.
After meeting a certain blue superhero.
It's so crazy that I feel like I have to keep reading. On the surface, if you told me the idea that they're bringing the Watchmen into the DC proper and that Dr. Manhattan is going to be controlling the universe and changing history, I would have said that's just a terrible idea. Yeah. But reading the stories, I really am excited by it. Like, I think they're really well done so far. And it's got me at least curious. Like, I'm entertained and I don't mind spending the money. So it's not, I'm liking it. I'm liking what I'm reading so far on it. And I don't have any complaints. Cool. Like, I thought it was pretty, I liked the Button. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's some of the best, it's actually some of the best stuff they put out in a long time, really.
I think so too.
Well, you know, just to share with the audience, how people voted, and it kind of shocked me. It surprised me a little bit. Of course, last place was 2%, was the Marvel Secret Wars. At 13% was the New 52. At 31% was Rebirth. And then, of course, 53% was Stop the Reboots.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, because I'm a cynical person, and that's kind of what I was thinking when I put it out there, is everyone would pick that. But, you know, the fact that people are picking Rebirth, it does give a lot of credence to what you guys, because John was defending Rebirth last week as well. So I might have to actually go check it out.
Well, it's just funny because, okay, I mean, they keep switching. Like, DC does really well with the animated universe. Mm-hmm. Marvel sucks at the animated universe, but they're killing it with the movie universe. Mm-hmm. Now, DC, okay, is sucking at the movie universe, but they're doing great on the TV universe. Marvel, not so great on the TV universe, well, except for Netflix, but then, you know, you get to the comic books, Marvel's going down, and DC is killing it again. So it's really interesting. The movies aren't mattering as much as you think because of the comic books, that DC's starting to push books out the door a lot faster now because they're actually doing well writing. Well, and, you know, it's just interesting to see how there's this like big war going on with all these different media levels, and you know, but I'm really glad that DC's finally winning one of them.
Yeah, you know? definitely even sales wise, but definitely critically, they're getting a lot of good feedback, I think, with Rebirth. There is talk. I mean, it's not a secret. There's another Marvel reboot coming, and I do think that's a response to Rebirth, where they went, oh, look, they did Rebirth. They went kind of back to the original continuity, and they're doing really well. Maybe we'll reboot our Marvel universe and go back to where we were.
Yeah. Is it going to be a reboot, or is it going to be more like a back-to-basics approach from Marvel? Is that kind of come clear yet or not? I mean, I think there's a difference to going kind of back to what's traditional and what works and doing the old cosmic reset.
Yeah, they haven't given any details yet on what the changes are going to be this time around. But, you know, of course, there's always the tagline, and the Marvel Universe will never be the same.
There's a third option, you know. There's the resetting it, there's the simplifying it, and then there's the fixing the last reboot.
Right.
Which is what Rebirth is. But
I mean, it's also accurate, it's one of those things too. Like, when I hear people complain about these things, you know, it's one I always like to say, well, you know, there's guys out there like JD who are producing, you know, standalone pieces that are don't take place in the Marvel or DC universe that are good stories and people should go check them out. You know,
I agree with that.
You know, I figure it's not. It's tough now with the bigger cons. It's not like it was, I'll say, 10 years ago. But, you know, New York, maybe. I have never been to San Diego, so I can't say. But, you know, you can walk around Artist Alley, and there's at least 15 guys in there who all have their own independent books, and something's going to catch your eye, you know?
So, JD, a question that I usually like to ask, where did you get your ideas? Were you reading something? Were you watching, like, Jackie Chan Adventures? Or, you know, what gave you the idea to start using the Eastern universe?
When I was in college, I was a film study major and a history major, a double major, and I took a lot of Japanese history courses, and I just was always really kind of into it, and the feudal era in particular I've always found kind of cool, the samurai thing, and I just, the idea popped in my head one day, well, what if they had vampires in Japan? And this is, man, 12-15 years ago, and I just kind of put the idea away, and then I was just, you know, taking stock of different ideas I had, and I wrote I was writing down all these pitches that I had in mind over the years, and I wrote that one down. I hadn't thought about it in a long time, but it popped in my head. I'm like, vampires in Japan. And I talked to some friends about it, and I'm like, man, that's a really cool concept. And I thought maybe I got something here. So I just sat down and came up with a story to go with the high concept. I'm kind of a high concept guy. Like, the high concepts will hit me first, and then I'll kind of build a story around that. Mm-hmm. And this one really kind of grabbed me. Like, well, sometimes when you're writing, you're writing, and after a while, you're like, oh, this isn't working. And you kind of put it away and go somewhere else. And in this case, I put this together in a couple days, and I knew exactly where I wanted to go. And I had characters that grabbed me, and I had concepts that I wanted to do. And, like, it was the end of the story. It was the thing that's always been in my head. Like, I know exactly how it was going to end. It was building the world to kind of create that and to fit into it a little bit. Which is a weird way to say it, that you work by some people, some writers like to work backwards. Some writers start with a character and let's see where the character goes. Mm-hmm. This was one of those cases where I had the high concept. I had the ending that I wanted, and it just fit. Like, I came up with these characters. I came up with the storyline. Like, we do a lot of stuff with both no theater and kabuki theater in the script, in the comic. And it clicked. Like, sometimes you're on and what you're doing, you feel like it's working. And, you know, the guys I had review it really dug it, and they say, man, you got something good here. So I hope it translates, and I hope people really get into the idea. But it all came from school, actually.
I guess there's, like, there are pitfalls to both approaches. If you've got a really good ending concept that you want to get to, sometimes it's really hard to figure out how the hell you get your characters to that. And if you've got a really good character and you just want to see where he goes, I've talked to writers where it's like they kept making left turns and they couldn't figure out, you know, couldn't keep him corralled to go where they thought they should go, or he or she, depending on the
character. That's this too. Like, I knew the ending I wanted, but it wound up being a different character in the end than I was expecting. Huh. Like, it evolved in a crazy place. And that's exactly what I said when I got to it. I'm like, well, that I didn't see that coming, you know, but it worked better. I'm like, this is where the story goes, and it makes much more sense here, you know. And I was able to really delve into the concepts of the samurai concepts, like the Bushido and the entire culture surrounding the samurai, the warrior class in Japan. Like, it worked really, really well together. I'm really proud of this thing. I can't wait to get it done and get people read it.
I love the idea that you're the writer, you control the entire universe, and you're still left sitting there going, huh, well, that's not what I expected.
That's what's fun about comics, man, is like, or not just comics in general, but writing in general, is you create these worlds and you create these characters, and they really, it sounds corny to say they take on a life of their own, but they really do. And they, you know, you really find yourself putting them in these situations, and you're just kind of, your brain goes on autopilot, and you know, something else inside you kind of takes over, and you're just kind of recording the story. It's fun. I like the transformative process of writing.
Yeah. Now here's something. If you've got a really strong character, I found that as you're sitting there writing and making and trying to write as if this character who you have a really good, you know, concept of what his moralities are, what his ideas are, what his likes and dislikes are and all that, he or she, when you're me, as you're writing to make your main character make the decisions they would, that's when it goes off the rails because
absolutely,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I, it's just it. I that's what I'm finding It's fun. You're right. It's like, you have no idea where it's going to go. And sometimes right. You have to throw other characters in his way in order to put him back on track.
Right. And I write pretty tight outlines. Like, I like to have a good solid plan before I go into something. And even there, you find yourself in the moment and something happens and you're like, oh, I need to explore this, or I need to revisit that. You know, let's make this better. And someone will come along. Like, I work with a guy named James Powell who helped edit this book, and he actually had some really good suggestions, like finish up Act Two suggestions that it just hit me. I'm like, oh my God, yeah, this makes so much more sense, and it helps motivate this so much better. And, you know, it's cool to let the story, because it's not just a script. It's not just you put it on paper and it's done. Like, you let people into the creative process, and they see things in your story that you don't see. And it at the end, you might fight it a little bit at first, and then at the end, you're like, oh man, this works 1,000 times better. Like, it's a living, breathing, the script is a living, breathing thing that's so much fun to work on. Cause at that point, there's nothing concrete yet. Everything is so fluid, right. And it can change in a moment. And that's the fun. That's the fun of creating.
Well, speaking of left turns, how does wrestling all this? Oh. I mean, when I was doing research, I was looking for you online, and I'm seeing one set of websites where it's all comic books and you know, the things you're putting out, and the other set I'm seeing Illinois and wrestling. I'm thinking, identity theft, witness protection. Not quite sure where this is going. So,
there's another part of my life where I've been an amateur wrestler since I was a kid, and it put me through college. And when I got out of college, I wrestled at Northern Illinois University as Division I wrestler. And when I got out of college, I didn't want to leave altogether, so I started coaching in high school. And I've been a high school wrestling coach for 14 years, and I'm currently at DeKalb High School in DeKalb, Illinois. And that's my thing. Like, that's my kind of my great passion in life. Like, wrestling is you don't make a living on it. You know, I don't get paid a lot to be a wrestling coach. I do it because I love the sport and I love working with kids. Like, that's my thing. Like, I don't have any other real hobbies. I write and read comics. I wrestle. I don't go golfing. I don't, you know, I don't do anything else. Like, that's my life. And coaching, like, this past weekend, I actually drove up to Grand Rapids and I was coaching my guys at a big regional tournament, and we're trying to get kids qualified for the big national tournament that we do out in Fargo every year. And, you know, it's the most excitement I have, and it's such a detachment from writing and creating that I enjoy it. And it's fun because I'm around my comic friends. I'm that wrestling guy. And when I'm around my wrestling guys, I'm like, oh, JD, he does those comics. It's weird. You know, and I get the kids that always come and goes, oh, who would win in a fight, Flash or Batman or something like that? You know, and it's, you always have to, you know, have those weird conversations with the kids. But, you know, I've gotten more kids to read comics than I think more people would expect. You know, I'm always trying to get kids into comics and into reading in general, because not a lot of kids read. It disappoints me, but you know, it's fun. You know, it's a different part. It's a different side of me. And like, wrestling is a sport. When you've been involved in it as deeply as I was in my youth, you don't really leave it. Like, everyone I know, like all my friends growing up, they're all still involved in wrestling. Like, I still talk to my college friends all the time that wrestled, and it's a weird little subculture, you know. That it's hard to explain, but it's just a part of my life, you know. One that does not pay my bills, but one that I enjoy greatly.
You're about the getting kids to read too, because these days you're fighting video games, you're fighting apps on their phones, you're fighting iPads, you're literally fighting everything. And I mean, back in my day, you had Alexander Scott Key, you had, you know, Tolkien, there was like Watership Down, so many different books that you could read, and there wasn't a lot of stuff competing for that time. Now, to get them to sit down and read a book when they could go play a video game or something is just, it's hard.
I spend a lot of time around teenage boys, and I'm going to be honest when I say that these kids today they're pulled in so many different directions, and they're expected, so much is expected from them. But in my case, you know, athletically and then academically, and in their personal lives. I mean, like, this current generation of kids that are coming up has the world literally at their fingertips and in their phone. They can learn and figure anything out in a heartbeat. But their time is so much more divided than, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and, you know, I I look at these 14 and 15 year old kids now, and there's so much more stuff that they're expected to do. Like, I'll be honest, as a coach, we ask a lot from our kids because, you know, we want them to be the best they can be. I was never challenged in that way at all in my youth. And like, and I see it in the classroom and I see it in their personal lives. Like, there's just, to be a kid these days is to be so regimented. And a lot of kids go the opposite direction. And that's why I think that a lot, you know, they have so much to, like I said, like fight for their attention. There's so much stuff going on and there's so much going on in their lives that it's hard to get them to say, hey man, why don't you read this? Or hey, why don't you check this out? You know, they move so quickly that sometimes, you know, reading is hard. It's weird to say that, but it's tough to sit there and make them read something. And I see in the class all the time when I'm trying to help tutor the kids. It's like, hey man, you got to read this book. And they just look at you like, oh my God, seriously, I got to read a book? It's hard. Like,
it's more than 3 pages. TLDR, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally true, like I said. But, you know, and like I said, even my super smart kids, you know, they have to do so much work, you know, with AP classes and homework. And, you know, I got to take this test so I can make sure I can get into this school, that, you know, reading for entertainment is so foreign to them. Like, they all love the it's so weird. Kids love the concept of superheroes. They love the property. They love the idea of Batman, but none of them have read anything. Like, they don't know the characters, you know, which I think is a shame. You know, I find like the kids always like, oh, you know, tell me about Batman. And I'll just talk about Batman for a little bit. And like, sometimes they respond like, that sounds really cool. And I'll hand them something. And sometimes you make a fan out of them, sometimes not, but you know, you gotta try to spread the good word somehow.
I mean, you would think, since they're wrestling, you know, capes and tights would be right down their alley. And oh, wait, different kind of wrestling.
not wrong. You're not wrong. We were in tights too, so it all kind of fits in that regard. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's, well, see, I don't know what it's like, really. Well, I mean, I do and I don't, because I mean, I have a 15-year-old son, but he's he goes to an online charter school, so he's not he doesn't deal every day with kids, you know what I'm saying? Like, he has a couple friends that he hangs out with, but it's not like he's going into a classroom and he's dealing with groups of kids. So I don't know what it's like. But you know, part of, I'm sure, I don't know about you, but I know John and I definitely agree on this point, is part of the reason you get into comics or reading Tolkien or any of that stuff, you know, it's escapism. You know, it's that, because, you know, you're not part of the cool clique, or, you know, you're getting picked on for whatever, you know, so you go home and you read Superman because it makes you feel empowered. I don't know. Does that kind of stuff go on as much as it did when we were kids?
I think so. I think there's still kids that do feel ostracized from one. Here's the thing, is all kids feel like that at one point or another in their life, no matter if they're the cool kids or they're not. Like, every kid feels detached at some point. That's part of being a teenager, you know. And they all find their outlets in some regard. Video games kind of are the great escapism for a lot of kids these days, because they can mentally detach, like, completely. Like, they're in a different world. It's a different experience,
right?
You know, but there are a lot of kids that read. I do have kids that read the fantasy stuff, and you know, that will connect with that. You know, kids are kids. You know, it's the same way they've always been. They're just, like you said before, there's a lot of stuff that competes for their attention nowadays. So I think it's harder for them to find these things, which is weird, because they're so much more accessible than they've ever been.
Yeah, they can always go into Halo and pretend that guy that they're shooting is the person who's making fun of them.
It's true. It's totally accurate, man.
Or they could read Red Sunrise. You know, one of those two.
I prefer that.
Yes, they should all read Red Sunrise. I think that's the key.
So what are your favorite comics? I mean, do you have any that partially inspired how you were writing these, or...?
You know, I have a lot of stuff I like to read. I've never really said, man, I want to write like that guy, or this guy's inspired me to write like this. Like, my favorite writer is Grant Morrison, but I don't write anything like him, you know? So, I mean, like, I can't really sit there and say, well, this is my great inspiration, but I love, like, We Three is probably my favorite book. Like, I absolutely adore it. Like, I'm a big animals guy. I love my dogs, and that story just always hits me hard. Kingdom Come was the book that kind of got me back into comics in college. Like, I got detached from it in high school a little bit, you know, wrestling and girls and stuff like that. And just kind of, and the late 90s comics weren't, or mid to late 90s comics weren't that great to begin with. I kind of lost interest at that point. But it was reading Kingdom Come in college that really got me back into it. So that story is a big special place in my heart. you know, with the traditional superhero stuff, I love Grant Morrison's Batman. I know there's a lot of people that probably are spitting right now and hating me. I love that. It connected with me on really, really well. You know, I really enjoy Brian Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man stuff as far as, like, the mainstream stuff goes. Like, independently, I love Scalped. Scalped is probably my favorite book that I've ever read, like, you know, as far as a series goes. I'm really digging Seven to Eternity right now from Rick Remender. I think it's a fantastic book. It's still pretty new, but I really like it. And those are things off the top of my head that I've really connected with over the years.
Right.
Hold on, I'm taking notes.
Well, it's funny because your comment about Grant Morrison's Batman, but you know, one of the things that he gave us and then took away from us, kinda. As Damian Wayne, that a lot of people love that character, regardless of what they think of Morrison's writing style. So,
and it's he added something to the mythos that's going to stay for the rest of time. I think, you know, and like I said, he approached it in a different way and added to it. And I don't know, man. I guess it's very polarizing. Like, I know people like me that love it, and there's people, I have friends, especially comic experience friends over the years, that were like, oh my god, that's terrible. It's not Batman. It's too weird. But, I mean, you said Damian Wayne is the one thing that'll go on forever, and it'll be the touchstone to the stuff he gave to that universe.
Well, he may be the next Batman, so
good thing. Who knows?
Maybe.
Well, if DC ever gets rid of Bruce Wayne, that would probably be it.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Well, you have to read the button.
The button?
Because it almost seems like they're pushing him out.
It does. That's what I'm talking about, is being interesting stuff. Like, I don't know where you can go with that. Like, where do you go with a Batman whose, spoilers, father says, you know, you don't have to do this.
Yeah.
Like, and that just adds such another cool level of complexity to the character. Like, that's such a fresh, interesting approach to Batman. Like, when he can question, do I have to do this?
Yeah, you know, it's not something he ever questioned. I mean, he questioned it in ways of, like, how do I keep going? But not, right. But not. Hey, Dad told me
the stop.
Whole reason.
Yeah,
yeah, the whole reason. Oh, it's good.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see where they go with it from here. Because listen, Tom King's doing a great job in the book right now. Like, I love what he's done with Batman so far. So I'm really curious to see where he picks up those threads and where it goes from there.
Yeah, well, you know, you have his. I haven't read it, so I don't know how he talks to his father. But you have his.
Well, forget everything.
Well, yep, I withdraw everything I said in the last 5 minutes.
But you can always have his mother come back and go, no, avenge us! So, right?
No, just no. Just buckets of no on that one. No.
It makes sense to me, so, you know, they're the more vengeful of the sexes.
That's true.
How do you...
At the risk of hearing yourself. Go on.
So anyway, cool. So do you have any books in the works for your next project? Any ideas floating around?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a couple little things floating around, couple little things in development, but all the attention right now is just finishing this Kickstarter up and really paying it the attention that it deserves and making sure that the book, one, gets funded, and two, gets produced on time, because that's my big thing. Is it took, like I said, Andalusia took far too long to get the rewards into my backers' hands. So the number one focus for the next few months is just making sure this thing is complete. And I got plans. We're doing some other things, but that's all kind of taking a back seat right now to making sure Red Sunrise is done and it's as good as it can be.
Right, and that's, you know, something that people should keep in mind, too, is that since it is all digital, right? The moment the Kickstarter ends, they can have the books pretty much right away, right?
They can have. Well, we're using the Kickstarter to actually make sure Pascal gets paid. I'm not making any money off this. This is all going to make sure we fund the art so that the actual guy who's really slaving away to get this stuff done can pay his mortgage and pay his bills. So all of it's going to him. And we've, you know, as it gets finished, we're going to get it to him. All the other digital rewards are done and ready to go.
Cool.
So those will be the second the Kickstarter's done. That stuff will be delivered. But the other book will probably be delivered later in summer. The main Red Sunrise book.
But people have something in their hands right away.
Absolutely.
Cool. See? We're always giving here, right?
I think you have to on a Kickstarter. It's all, you know, especially when you're competing for so much space, is you have to draw people's attention, and you have to be able to give something to people. Now we live in such an on-demand society where, you know, you can binge watch anything you want at the touch of your hands. Like, people don't like to wait for stuff. And, you know, I wish I could have just, you know, paid for it out of pocket and, you know, recoup the money on the back end, but it didn't work out. My wife said no. So we had to kind of do it this way.
They'll do that to us, won't they?
Yes, they will.
So I'll ask you the typical podcast comic book interview question. If you could work for one of the big two and work on any character you could, who would that be?
I guess every guy who thinks about this. I like the horror stuff. I like the noir stuff. If I could write for Marvel, the character I'd like to write the most is probably the Son of Satan.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's so much potential in that character that I don't really think has been hit since the Steve Gerber stuff of the 70s. Like, I have a ton of ideas for that character. And if I could ever work to see, it would definitely be the Question.
That is a answer we get a lot.
Really? That's cool. Like, I'm glad. I like hearing that there's a lot of other people that dig that character too. Like, he's awesome. I absolutely love the Question.
Yeah. I don't think DC gives him, you know, the credit they should at this point. You know, like,
I think that's why so many writers want to do it, is because there is so much, like with Batman and Superman, like so much stuff has been done, you know, and whereas you get those characters like the Question or the Demon or something like that, where there's not quite as much and you have more flexibility to put your own creative stamp on it.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it was, Denny O'Neil and who's the co-creator?
Dennis Allen.
Right. Right.
Oh, the co-creator, that goes back I'm blanking.
Yeah.
That's back in the
60s. Right.
I think it was Dick Giordano and Steve Ditko.
Oh, that's right. It was Ditko. Okay. Yeah. No, but Denny O'Neil did work on him for a while when they were at...
In the 80s. Yeah, that's a great book.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I mean, I wonder, with characters like that, are they afraid that the kind of stories they would give to him, they would also, you know, give to Batman, so there would be a crossover? But I don't really think it's true.
I think it's just dollars and cents thing. It's like... You look at, I mean, Marvel tried to, you know, say what you want about them. They gave a lot of different characters shots at books, and, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work. Sometimes you hit a home run, and, you know, more often than not, the financially it just doesn't work in the long run. I mean, I think that's what it comes to, those smaller characters. It just makes dollars. It's dollars and cents. You know, and I get it, but again, that's why there's so much creative freedom, because they just don't have those long, sustained runs.
Right. Well, that's true. I know, and, I mean, there's so many characters that, like you said, in the 90s, They got their start. They maybe had a fairly decent run, maybe a year, and then were never heard of again.
My comic collection is full of, I got stuff. I got Dark Hawk and NFL Super Pro and all kinds of weird books from the early 90s in my collection. Yeah.
I have those. I just saw them like a week ago when I was going through stuff downstairs in the basement. NFL Super Pro too. I remember that. That was actually a big deal. That went in Dark Hawk as well. And there was a whole bunch of others along with those. I forget. Damn it.
Yeah, there was. I mean,
the Comet or something.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, like, back in the day, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'll admit, I was one of those in the 90s who had on my pull list all number ones.
I think we all were in the 90s. That's just how kids back then were programmed. Like, if it was number one, you had to have it because it was going to be a collector's item no matter what, which unfortunately is still the case. But, I mean, when I was 10, I bought all 5 X-Men number ones because the market told me I had to, and I was 10, so I did. You know, like, I still have all 5 of them. And the fold-out gatework cover, you know.
That's
the way the market was back then, you know.
And what was it? I forget which one was. It was Amazing Spider-Man, or was it just Spider-Man? There was a number one back in like 1991. Yeah. And there was
McFarlane.
A fold cover. Toddy McSpidey, right? And it was there was a gold cover, a platinum cover, a black and white cover. And
funny story about this. I didn't know these existed, and then thank God for YouTube that stuff like this can surface. There was a series of videos that was shot, I want to say 92, with Stan Lee interviewing a lot of
like Rob Liefeld and Jim
yes,
Lee.
Yes, and it's called Stan Lee Interviews the Comic Greats. And, like, you know, he also had the John Romita Sr. and Jr. on an episode and everything. And the Jim Lee one, you know, he's talking about that X-Men number one cover because it's, you know, had just blown up and whatever, however many millions of copies it sold. And he's like, oh, yeah, because, you know, this is the first time this has ever been done. There's five different covers. And I'm watching it and I'm going, that's it. That was the downfall right there.
It certainly had a gigantic impact on the industry. No one could argue that.
And they're talking now that they're headed for another crash in the comic book industry. I mean, I don't know how true that is.
Well, as a guy who's trying to make a living, I hope that's
well,
not true.
I think the article I was reading was mainly talking about the slip in sales with Marvel right now as an indicator and being a backlash. But, you know, we talked about this in the last episode, and it's a theme that keeps repeating. I think one of the issues is, you know, they hope to gain sales off of their movies. But, you know, if you go in and to a comic book store and say, oh, I want to read Thor, and Thor's a woman in the comic, but you just watched Chris Hemsworth play him in, you know, four movies, it's like, well, wait a minute, that's not Thor. You know, okay, well, let me read Captain...
Give me Iron Man, and, okay, here's Iron Girl.
Yeah, wait, Iron Heart, like... No, where's Tony Stark? You know.
I think there's definitely a case that could be made with that. Like, I think – I like what Marvel was trying to do and trying to diversify their line and do something different. But it just was – everything hit at once, it seemed like. You know, where none of the big three are in their roles. Captain America's the, you know, the top heel in the company, basically, to use pro wrestling jargon. I get it. I make sense. I mean, like, you know, the Secret Wars thing kind of, I don't know. I haven't read much Marvel since Secret Wars. Like, it just didn't connect with me. Like, it wasn't poorly written. I don't think it was badly written or anything like that. It just didn't hit me on an emotional level. So, I mean, I haven't read much Marvel. I still read Dan Slott's Spider-Man book. I love that one. And that's pretty much all I'm reading right now. But I get it. I get the critiques. I get where they're coming from. And it makes sense to me.
Right. It's, you know, again, you can't fault them for wanting to be more diverse, but you can fault them for trying to change everything at once and you know, instead of just creating a sidekick for Thor that's a woman and then give her her own book and see how that does. You know, they went, nope, Thor's a woman, you know.
Well, it's like, too, with Black Panther. Black Panther was really good. And then they come out with two other Black Panther books. You know, when a character who's had a hard time sustaining a long run throughout its history, and all of a sudden that property has to sustain three books. And that doesn't make sense financially, you know, like, but Marvel's Marvel, you know, I can't tell them what to do, you know, but it doesn't click, like, and you wonder why they don't work. You know, I don't know, it's unfortunate. And it's cyclical. You know, the business is up, business is down. So I'm sure I'm hoping this back to basics approach that they do later in the year makes things better.
Right. Well, you do kind of tell them what to do in a way with where you put your dollars.
They mean to. That's true. I guess that is the only thing you can say is they say vote with your wallet. And, you know, I don't know if that's – I think apathy is the worst thing that you can ever have to anything. If people hate something, they'll talk about it. If people don't care, that is definitely the worst thing that can happen. And I guess that is – I never thought about that. I guess it is kind of how I felt about it. I just haven't really cared.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of that going on, and that's why – you know, they're talking about their sales keep slipping, and it's like, because people are like, yeah, I don't really care for this, so I'll just go see what's going on over at DC, or I'll go see what that JD's new book is all about.
That's what they should say. You know, I think there's a good argument for that, is there's a lot of really cool, innovative stuff going on in indie comics. I mean, like, I got to, you know, doing Kickstarters and being an online presence, you know, you get to meet a lot of friends, and I really like a lot of the stuff I see from indie comic creators. Like, there's a lot of cool things. There's a lot of people that are experimenting and not just the big name guys in Image, but I mean, there's a lot of guys that haven't broken through that are super creative and that are really doing neat things that I'm liking reading. Like, I get a lot of, I like contributing to Kickstarters because it gives me a chance to see something different and read something that I might not find in a comic book shop.
Oh yeah. I mean,
you know, like,
I totally agree. You know, I mean, just on this, it's part of why we do this show is to spotlight independent creators like you. I mean, I think our last handful of interviews have all been people who have these really creative projects out, you know, and it's just, you know, they've got a Kickstarter going or they're just working through a much smaller press and, you know, the people just don't know they exist or not, you know, but that's why we're here. We're trying to spread the word so people can go, oh, you know, I heard about that, that terminal project on your podcast, or I heard about, you know, oh God, my mind's blanking. JD's book. I can't think of
Red Sunrise.
Red's, yes.
Yeah, Red Sunrise. Yeah. Say it again. It's Red Sunrise. Right?
Red Sunrise.
Everybody together. Red
yes.
Sunrise.
I heard about Red Sunrise, you know, and it was a really cool book, you know.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's like the indie population, they're cross-pollinating. They're coming up with new ideas from outside the closed ecosystems of these, of the big comic book. Not that I'm, you know, I'm not down on Marvel and DC and whatever, but it goes back to what we were saying about, you know, bringing up the diversity thing. They didn't go out and try to find new writers with new ideas to bring in, you know, characters that were, you know, diverse. They just stamped diversity on top of their existing characters.
Right.
So, you know, it's like it always is. You know, you get these big conglomerates that need to protect what they've got, and they've got a certain idea of what they have, and that's going to drive, no matter how much creativity you've got in these companies, it's going to drive things in a certain way, whereas where the indies are just, it's all greenfield. People are coming up with ideas that nobody have ever heard of before, and, you know, you come up with Eastern vampires. Okay, that sounds cool. Let's go with that, you know?
Right. You're right. I mean, there's like corporate comics, having never worked in, I've had some friends that have done some stuff, and there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. There's a lot, pardon the cliche, but there's a lot of masters you got to serve. You know, it's hard to get the story that you want out the way you want it. And the trade-off for that is you're getting paid, you know, whereas guys like me that are trying to build a name, we have the freedom to do whatever we want, really. You know, I had an idea about vampires and samurais. Hey, let's just go and let's do it. But the trade-off is I got to find the ways to create that. And so, you know, necessity makes you creative. It makes you find a way to have to stand out a little bit. So, you know, for me, I like spending money on indie books because I feel like I'm supporting people like me, you know, and that makes me feel like I'm contributing something positive. So, I mean, I enjoy that. Like, you know, I was down on corporate comics for a while, for a couple of years, but the rebirth thing has kind of hit me right in the nostalgia button. So I'm enjoying that. But at the same time, like I like seeing guys like my buddy Paul Aller. We've been friends in Comics Experience since like 2010. And he's got a lot of really cool indie stuff that he's done, and he's starting to get noticed through his work. He's got a thing with Secret Empire out, and he's got some Ninja Turtle stuff coming out through IDW. And that's a story I like hearing. My buddy, another buddy named Rich Dewick, who's actually helping out with my Kickstarter, he's doing a script critique as one of our reward tiers. You know, he did his book Gutter Magic was, you know, totally independent, got it out there, figured out how to do it on his own. Now he's getting some Ninja Turtle work from IDW. So I like those things. I like seeing guys who came up through the indie grassroots thing kind of crack that ceiling and get into the corporate comic world and be successful.
Right.
So, you know, that's the stuff that excites me about comics right now.
No, yeah, that's a good thing to be excited about. You know, you want to see your friends succeed, and you want to see yourself succeed too.
It's just, not only just your friends, I mean, it's just the new voices.
Right,
it's guys that you know are talented. Like I know that Paul and Rich are good. You know, and seeing them kind of get their due and have other people see how good they are. That's what's exciting. I like seeing my friends succeed. That's what's cool.
Yeah, I love. I don't know if you listen to The Nerdist or not, and even any of Kevin Smith's podcasts, he always talks about that when he sees when they see people they know succeed, that makes them excited, you know, more so than when they have something that hits real big. So
yeah, and that's fun. It's like I think there's a real sense of community in independent comics. You know, there's competition, but it's not like super cutthroat. And coming from an athletic background, you know, I know cutthroat competition, and it can get nasty, but I don't see that with independent comics. I see a bunch of people that want to help each other. Like a lot of my backers on this Kickstarter are independent creators. You know, like they want me to succeed just like I want them to succeed, you know. And it creates this really cool symbiotic process where like everyone's helping everybody, and everybody knows that we're creating good stuff, and it makes for a much better world, in my opinion, like a creative world where stuff is is not only accessible, like you can read it on your phone, read it on your iPad, but you know, you're helping a new generation kind of break through. And that's what's a lot of fun right now.
No, I mean, that's true. And I have to say that, yeah, the community for the independent creators is super strong, and I've seen it over and over again. I don't know if you listened to the episode where we had some of the guys on who are working on this project called Terminal, and it's essentially a bunch of independent creators wrote stories, and they're putting together them in a collected hardback book, and they're gonna, you know, that's their Kickstarter project. So there'll be like five or six stories in volume one, and there'll be five or six stories in volume two, all from different independent creators. And there is a theme that kind of connects them together, but it's a way to showcase a bunch of people together at once, you know, and mm-hmm. that's just the idea, is that it's these creators supporting each other and working together to spread the word about each other, you know. And I see that over and over again in this industry, you know.
And it's what's cool about it. On the flip side, it does make it hard to stand out.
Yeah.
You know, you really got to go above and beyond and be creative. And that was one of the things with the digital Kickstarter that I had to figure out, is, well, what can I do that's a little bit different? Like, I did for one of my updates, I'm doing a podcast where I talk to people who are involved with the book for some way, and I put it as an update. You know, I'm doing some video stuff where I can, you know, put those out there. And one of my reward tiers is like, hey, you back this book at $100 and I will edit your Kickstarter video for you. You know, like, what can you do to stand out and get that attention? Right. Because it's hard, man. There's so much going on, and you know, I'd love to support every Kickstarter that I see come across me, but at some point, you know, you just don't, you only have so many dollars in your
right,
pocket.
Exactly.
You know,
that is so true. You know, I mean, I probably would back everything I could, but then my wife would come and cut up all my credit cards.
Yep.
And go, we have to pay a mortgage, got to pay the electric bill. Like, oh, come on. We can live without electric
that
for
was
a month.
The exact conversation. What was that? I had that exact conversation with my wife just the other night. You know, we were joking about birthday presents, and she's like, no, we paid for your first comic book. You're done for the rest of time. So I'm like, okay, you're right.
I actually had that conversation too, where like it's getting close to my birthday and there's something big I want to buy, you know, so my wife's like, okay, you can go ahead and buy that, but that's your birthday present. It's like,
yep. I feel like I'm 12 when I have that conversation. I'm like, okay.
And she's always quick to remind you, right? Like that the week before the birthday, like, oh, so what are you getting me? You got your present already.
Yep. Oh my God. Yeah. I had that exact same conversation.
Good. It's not just me. That's good to know. Cool. So, wow, we're getting to about an hour here. So there is a question that we usually like to wrap up on, and, that is, how do you measure success?
That is such a, man, that is a tough question for me. As I said before, I'm an athlete. So winning, it's always, my whole life has been driven around, man, I got to win. Everything I do, I got to win. And sometimes that mentality can make you absolutely miserable, you know. And it's hard. And I think it's hard for me to sit there and go, well, this makes me successful and this doesn't. And if you'd asked me this question 2 years ago, I might have had a different answer for you. Right now, how I'm defining success is I'm creating, I'm being active, I'm getting my work out there, and I'm trying to build a spot where I can use this to help fund our life. You know, I'm not a financially driven person in normal. Like, I'm more about experiences, and I've never been a big driven guy by money. My wife had a kid last year. And I always kind of worried about when he would show up, because I'd be like, well, because everyone says when your first kid comes, your priorities change. Right. And I kind of worried that meant I wouldn't want to go after these things anymore. The opposite happened when Andrew showed up, or our son, I kind of figured out, okay, if I'm going to do this, I have to do this in a way where it's not taking away from my son and it's actually helping him. Like, I have to figure out a way to do this in a way where I'm building toward my family instead of being selfish and doing this because I want to do it. So right now I'm defining success as, how can I use what, if I'm successful, that means that what I'm doing is helping my family progress and move forward and not hurting us financially. That's really it where it comes to me right now. Like, I don't like being the kind of guy that says, like, well, I have to be writing this at this point, or I have to be selling X amount of books. And, you know, that stuff is out of my control.
Right.
You know, all I can control is what is the stuff I'm creating, what I like, and is it good? Or do people like it? You know, I can't even control if people like it. All I can control is, do I like the book? Am I happy with what I'm creating? And is it working to help my family? That is how I'm defining success right now. The I actually, you know, I'm a cameraman. That's what I do, right? Mm-hmm. I said before, I shot an interview with Bryan Cranston about 6 months ago, and he had a great quote that's actually, it was a pinned tweet before I launched the Kickstarter for me. It's, the act of creating is the reward. Anything else is out of my control. And I heard that, and I immediately wrote it down because I'm like, that is the most profound way to look at success. Like, you're out there doing stuff. Right. You know, you're out, the act of doing the creation is what's important. Anything else is totally out of your control, and you have no idea what's going to happen with anything. So that's where I'm at right now. It's to create something cool, and don't take food off your son's plate. That's all I can ask for.
Yes, I think the second part might be more important, but yes,
far more important, I think, in the long run. But that's how I'm defining whether or not I'm cool. successful.
No, that's a great answer. And I know if I ask you again in 5 years, it'll be different.
It might be completely different. I think that's kind of what we all are. Aren't we all always trying to grow and change as people and trying to make ourselves better? You know, it's what I tell the boys every day when we're in the wrestling room. Like, you're always working to be the best version of you.
Right. That is true. Cool. So, all right. I just want to remind everyone, as of the date this is being posted, there's a week left in the Kickstarter. So, links in the description below as always. So please go and support this great project. You know, we might have just bumped into each other on Twitter, but I really have liked getting to know you in this hour, JD. And I definitely think your project is worth succeeding.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun doing this, man. I love talking about comics. I love talking about the stuff I'm creating. I like meeting new people. I love podcasts in general. I'm a podcast junkie. Like, I just discovered your guys's when we first met, and I'm like, oh man, this one's really cool. I should have been listening to this before. So I got like 10, I got 10 back loaded on my phone right now, ready for road trips. Cool. So like, it's really cool, man. I thank you guys for having me on. It means a lot.
Oh, great. I'll apologize in advance for your
Before you go, where can people find you online? Yeah. Where's the best place to find you?
I've got a Facebook page, Facebook, JD Oliva. Twitter's JD_Oliva. I'm really easy to come by that way. You know, I'm in the process of building my own website. I want to have that launched after Red Sunrise is finished. Screwed that up, should have had that done before. You know, you learn as you go. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. So if you guys want to follow me on Twitter, that's cool. JD_Oliva.
And yes, he'll talk to anyone. Look, he's talking to us. So
I like talking. It annoys my wife sometimes that I like talking so much.
All right, cool. So as I think that's a good place to put a pin in it for this week. So as always, boys and girls, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week. Are you strong enough to stop a stupid movie rumor?
Are you more powerful than a bad comic book event?
Are you able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have got absolutely nothing better to do?
Then join the conversation by connecting with us on Facebook, Twitter, Slack, and other social media platforms.
And help us get our capes from getting stuck in the door by becoming an official Patreon patron.
And if you just want more content from us, don't forget to check out our website, where we post way more than we can discuss here.
So what are you waiting for? When you join our fight, everyone wins.